Well, I'm not sitting because of old age, contrary to what somebody thought. And I do ask you to pray for the children in the nursery because Robert's back there with them. So that will be fun. I want to do something this morning. Last week we looked at the book of Revelation and about returning to first love. And we talked a little bit Wednesday night about what the root problem was probably in the church in Ephesus, something we discussed a little bit about fear and not understanding and grasping the love that God has for us, and so many times can put us in a motivation of doing things for the wrong reason. And our motives, even though we're very, very busy for God, we're doing them trying to earn something that's already been given to us through grace. Next Sunday, Pastor Jim is going to be here. It'll be his last Sunday in North Carolina, and he's going to be sharing with us a little bit about the work in China that they're going to be doing. And then the following Sunday after that, we're going to pick back up in Revelation 2. But I wanted to do something that I've done twice here before, and I'd considered doing this 2 weeks ago, thought about it, prayed about it, didn't feel led to, and then it was mentioned Wednesday night by somebody, and there's just been a little something stuck in my crawl since then. I think the Holy Spirit just wants me to share this with you again, this story about the boy who loved music. And the passage of Scripture that it's based off of is out of the book of Lamentations. And it's in Lamentations chapter 5, verses 14 and 15. And even though it is a story about grace, it's a story about people who have lost the song. It's a story about people who have lost the appreciation for the love that God has for us. And as I shared with you, back in 1989, I first heard this shared. Steve Brown, who was a pastor at Coral Ridge Presbyterian Church at that time, not Coral Ridge, but in Key Biscayne, was a pastor there and wrote this story, shared it at a conference, and I never remember weeping so hard in all of my life as the picture of God's grace became so clear to me. And ever since then, I had lunch with him several years later, and I told him that I'd shared this story in several places, and he gave me permission to share it whenever and wherever I could. And it's always good. You know, the Apostle Peter talked to the folks when he wrote to them. He said, "It's not burdensome for me to repeat some things to you. It's important." And sometimes Jesus, a lot of the things that we read about Jesus, the stories and messages that Jesus preached them a lot more than one time. He re-preached a lot of things to a lot of different groups to emphasize the truths and drive home the realities of his kingdom. But in Lamentations 5, this is Jeremiah's cry. This is the weeping of his heart for his people, having missed out on God's best for them and not appreciating the grace that God had poured out upon him and had wandered far away from him. There were promises of restoration that was coming. But Jeremiah mentions in verse 14 of Lamentations 5, the elders are gone from the gate, young men from their music. The joy of our hearts has ceased, and our dancing has been turned into mourning. Sometimes when I look at my own life, sometimes when I look at congregations, that's the picture I see. We've lost our dance. We've lost the joy. We've lost the excitement and the song that God puts in our hearts through a relationship with Jesus Christ. Other things have cluttered it. A lot of times it's religion. A lot of times it's things that have become cumbersome to us in this world. And it's always good for God to remind us how simple the good news is and how really, really good that it is. Steve writes, "I want to tell you a story. It's not fiction. Fiction is the telling of a story that is not true in a way that makes it seem true. The story I'm going to tell is true, but its truth is deeper than the story. It's myth. It is myth in the deeper sense of the word. Some say that parables are closer to truth than polemics and that stories tell more than sermons. Or to put it another way, myth sometimes touches a deeper truth in us than philosophy. I suspect that's particularly true when presenting fairly radical ideas especially when it comes to grace. There once was a little boy named Ebed. Ebed had music in his heart, but he wanted it in his hands. He wanted to play the piano. In fact, he wanted to play the piano more than anything in this world. No one knew it, of course. Boys aren't supposed to play the piano. They're supposed to fish and camp and play sports. And Ebed liked all of those things, but more than anything, he wanted to play the piano. But Ebed's family couldn't afford a piano, and they couldn't afford piano lessons for him. So when his friends talked about learning to play the piano, Ebed would laugh and make fun of them. Playing the piano, he'd say, it's for girls. It's more fun to play ball. Pretty soon you guys will be wearing dresses and carrying purses. Then Ebed would walk off with a smirk on his face. But inside, he knew the truth. More than anything in the world, he wanted to play the piano. Sometimes, when no one was around, he would sit down at the piano at school and try to play. He really wasn't that bad for someone who'd never had a lesson. In fact, his untutored playing made Ebed think that he might have some talent. One day, at the local ice cream parlor, Ebed noticed his friends and their piano teacher eating ice cream and laughing together. Now, it was obvious to Ebed that the piano teacher not only taught his students to play the piano, but was also their friend. They, of course, didn't see Ebed standing by the door. They were too absorbed in one another. Ebed stood there for the longest time, afraid they would notice him, but also, in a strange way, afraid that they wouldn't. After a while, Ebed left the ice cream parlor. He felt very sad. He'd kept up a good front in the parlor, but if anyone had noticed him, they would have noticed the tears welling up in his eyes. Ebed ran down to the lake, where he went sometimes when he wanted to be alone. Once he was sure nobody was around, he sat down on a rock and began to cry. Ebed cried and thought for a long time. He thought about how much he wanted to play the piano. And he thought about the piano teacher. He knew his family was poor, and there were some things he just couldn't have. But still, it would be nice to have a friend like the piano teacher. All of a sudden, Ebed heard a sound behind him. Turning quickly, he found to his horror that the piano teacher was standing there smiling at him. "Where did you come from?" Ebed asked more harshly than he intended. "I noticed you at the ice cream parlor," the piano teacher replied. "You looked lonely, and I thought I would follow you. Do you mind if I sit down here for a while?" "Suit yourself," Ebed said. "But I did come here to be alone, and I didn't invite you." The piano teacher sat down on the same rock with Ebed and for a long time didn't say a word. When the teacher did speak, his voice was soft and understanding. "Ebed, would you like to play the piano?" "What makes you think that? The piano is for girls and..." Ebed's voice trailed off as he looked into the piano teacher's eyes. He couldn't lie. "Yes! Yes," Ebed admitted slowly, I would like to play the piano. In fact, sir, I've always wanted to play the piano, but I don't have the money to pay for lessons." "Well, maybe I can do something to help." "Yeah?" Ebed responded. "Like what?" "Well, I could be your friend. Friends don't charge for helping, and if I was your friend, I could teach you to play the piano." "That would be great," Ebed shouted, jumping up. In his excitement, he almost fell off the rock into the lake, but the piano teacher caught Ebed just in time, and they both started to laugh. Ebed couldn't remember a time when he had laughed so hard. "You know my name," Ebed remarked. "I can't believe you know my name." "Yes," the piano teacher agreed. "I have known your name for a long time." "Well, if we're going to be friends, I guess I ought to know your name too." "It's Emmanuel," the teacher said, "but my best friends call me Manny. I hope you'll call me Manny too." Ebed decided that day he was going to be the best piano player who ever lived. Others, he thought to himself, they don't think playing the piano is that important, but it's what I've wanted all my life, and I will work and work until I'm the best piano student the teacher has, and he'll be very proud of me. But over the next few weeks, Ebed found that playing the piano was not as easy as he had supposed. He had thought he would be well on his way after only a few lessons. Nobody, however, had told him about the scales and the hours of practice and the simple little tunes beginners have to play. One day, after an extremely frustrating lesson, E.B. turned to his teacher dejectedly. "I'll never get this right, Manny. I keep making the same mistakes over and over and over again. And I can see it in your eyes. You're about ready to give up on me, and I would understand. It's all my fault." "Ebed," Emmanuel's smile made his words almost unnecessary. "I will never give up on you. Friends don't give up on friends. What if I leave and I don't come back?" "Ebed, if you never came back, you are still my friend. I will always be here to give you lessons." And then with a grin, Emmanuel asked, "Do you still want to play the piano?" "Of course I want to play. I've always wanted to play. But nobody ever told me it was going to be this hard." "Did I tell you it would be easy?" "No, sir. But I did say you would learn to play the piano and that I would be your friend. We're working on the first, and the second will always be." Emmanuel sat down on the piano bench beside E.B. "Let's look at that piece you're working on." E.B. sheepishly got his beginner's book and turned to Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. E.B. blushed to show his teacher that he'd gotten no further in the book. "Play it for me," Emmanuel said. "But I can only play the treble line well." "It doesn't matter. Play it for me anyway." So E.B. began to peck out the melody of Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star. To be perfectly honest, the little star didn't twinkle very brightly. E.B. kept missing notes and stopping often to make sure his fingers were in the right position. His rhythm was halting. And then to his surprise, E.B. heard the most beautiful music he had ever heard. He looked to his right. Emmanuel was adding to E.B.'s notes with his right hand. And then, without missing a beat, the piano teacher eased himself behind E.B., encircled E.B. from behind with his arms, and added bass notes with his left hand as well. E.B. continued to play his one-note melody, but now it sounded totally different. Emmanuel's melody wove into E.B.'s single line, transforming the simple melody into a complex symphony of sound. E.B. was so fascinated that he almost forgot to keep playing. The harmonies, one on top of the other, soared in an increasingly complicated arrangement, sounding almost like an orchestra. Soon, E.B. was totally lost in the wonder and beauty of the music coming from the piano. When Emmanuel and E.B. finished playing the piece, E.B. felt tears stinging in his eyes, and through the tears, he could see Emmanuel smiling. "We make pretty good music together," Emmanuel said. "You don't mean we, do you?" "Yes, Ebed. We made the music together. You did what you could, and I did the rest." And then Emmanuel invited Ebed into his study. Over the weeks, E.B. had enjoyed sitting and talking with Emmanuel as much as he enjoyed learning to play the piano. In fact, if the truth were known, E.B. enjoyed his time with Emmanuel more than anything else in the world. Emmanuel lived in a large house close to the lake where he and E.B. had first met. The house was almost overpowering in its size, and E.B. always felt as if he were visiting the house of a great nobleman. At least, that's how he felt until Emmanuel would answer the door. Then the cold, foreboding nature of the house was transformed by the presence of the teacher. And E.B. felt he was visiting a good friend. But then, E.B. thought often, any place where Manny lived could not help but be wonderful. Emmanuel was obviously quite wealthy and had wonderful taste. E.B. was too young to understand the intricacies of interior design, but he was old enough to know that the house was right. From the paintings which hung in the large entrance hall and the thick carpet on the floors to the grand piano at which Emmanuel gave lessons, everything fit together and made E.B. feel comfortable. One thing always puzzled E.B., but whenever he was with Manny, he forgot to ask him about it. E.B. knew Manny had a lot of students, but E.B. never saw any of them. In fact, when E.B. was with Manny, there was never anyone else around, and even more surprising, Manny never seemed to be in a hurry to get to another lesson. Often E.B. would expect his time to be limited, but it never was. Today wasn't any different. Manny seemed to have all the time in the world. Emmanuel's book-lined study, where they were now sitting, felt right to EB2. The study was just off the studio where Emmanuel taught his students. They were sitting in easy chairs, Emmanuel's big frame filling his chair, and EB's small little frame almost swallowed up by his. EB's feet barely even touched the floor. My wife and EB share things in common, by the way. Ebed, Emmanuel began when they were settled. You said I made the music, or at least you insinuated it. Well, Ebi replied, you did make the music. You didn't need my single line to produce the kind of music you played today. That's true. I could make music all by myself, but I've chosen not to do that. I've chosen instead to work with my friends and to help them make the music. Like today? Yes. Like today, you played as best you could and I made up for the rest. Ebed, from now on, it will be that way. Whenever you do what you can, I will make up for the lack. If you do nothing, I will still make up for the rest. And when you're older and you play with far greater competence than you do now, you will still make some mistakes. Just remember that even then, when others think you don't need me, I will still make up for the lack. And there's one thing I want you to remember always. It won't mean a lot to you right now, but later you will think of it, and you will be glad. What's that, Manny? Ebi asked, feeling a little uncomfortable. Oh, don't look so pained, Emmanuel laughed reassuringly. It's good. I want you to always remember that you are my piano student. No matter where you go, no matter what you do, no matter how well or how poorly you play the piano, you will always be my student. And Eben, you can hang your hat on this. Someday, perhaps in another place and time, you will be able to play the piano exactly the way I play the piano. Even then, you will still be my student and my friend. Then, to emphasize his words, Emmanuel leaned forward. Do you understand what I'm saying?
I think I do, Ebi responded.
Ebi, I love you far more than you can understand now. That will never, ever, ever stop, no matter what else happens. I give my life for my students, and because of that, they are always my students. Ebi thought a lot about what Manny had said to him that day. In fact, he never forgot it for the rest of his life. Well, but once he almost did. As Ebi continued to play piano and take piano lessons, he found others teased him. Same way he teased Manny's students before he started taking piano lessons. Don't see you on the ball field anymore, one boy snickered at him after school one day. Oh, I've been busy. Ebi responded somewhat hesitantly. Oh, playing the piano, huh? Well, yeah, mostly. What do you become, some kind of fairy? You and the girls ought to get along just fine. That was just the beginning. Soon the other boys joined in the teasing, making fun not only of Ebi's piano playing, but of Ebi's piano teacher as well. At first, Ebi was angry at them, but after a while, he started listening to and believing some of the things they said. Little boys need friends, and Ebi was losing his rapidly. Ebi visited Manny's house less frequently, and he almost stopped practicing the piano altogether, even though he'd been making genuine progress. The more he'd practiced, the more and the better he had played, but now he was almost back to the level of a beginner. He was so ashamed that he finally just stopped going to see Emmanuel. Weeks passed, and even though his friends had stopped making fun of him, Ebi felt miserable. Sometimes he would look at the piano at school and think about playing. It was just too costly. At night, Ebi would think about Manny, and sometimes he would cry. He didn't know why he cried, but he did know that he missed Manny. Then before finally falling asleep, Ebi would make all kinds of promises to himself about getting back to the piano and going to see Manny. But when morning would come, he always forgot about the promises. Manny asked about you yesterday, Martus, one of Emmanuel's other students, told Ebi one day at recess. He said to tell you not to forget what he told you.
Evie didn't know what Martis meant until later that afternoon when he remembered that special talk in Manny's study. Evie felt the tears well up in his eyes. Instead of going home, he went to Emmanuel's house. "I've been expecting you," Emmanuel said as he opened the door. "Are you ready for your next lesson?"
"But I haven't played in so many months."
Evie looked down and pretended to find something quite interesting on the rock floor on the porch.
"Doesn't matter.
You're always my piano student, and that hasn't changed. You may have been a poor one for the past few months," Emmanuel smiled, "but you are my student. Come on in. We can begin where we left off." Well, it was the best piano lesson Evie ever had. In fact, Evie thought at home later, "I'm almost glad I turned away from Manny and his piano lessons. If I had never turned away, I would never have known how much Emmanuel loves me and how much he wants me to continue piano lessons." It was a growth experience for Evie. Whenever his friends teased him, he would remember how he had caved into their criticism and how Emmanuel still loved him. And his sadness would be transformed into joy and thankfulness. But the trouble Evie had with those who didn't understand the importance of playing the piano was minor compared to the trouble he had with his fellow piano students. Evie thought that once he had become a piano student, he would be part of a family of musicians where everyone understood and helped each other play the piano better. It was not to be. "You're doing it all wrong," shouted a little girl who had overheard him practicing on the piano at school. "You're playing soft when you ought to be playing loud, and you're playing loud when you ought to be playing soft."
"Your rhythm is all off," criticized another student who had heard Evie play. "How do you ever expect to play the piano if you can't tell the difference between 4/4 and 3/4 time?"
"You hit three wrong notes," another exclaimed. "If you don't start playing the right notes, you're going to disappoint the piano teacher. After all he's done for you. The rest of us have been talking, and we've decided that if you don't get better, you're going to shame all of us."
"If you're ever going to play the piano, you've got to practice at home, not at school,"
one of the students informed Evie one day after class.
But I don't have a piano at home," protested Evie.
"Well, why don't you get your parents to buy you one?"
"We don't have the money, that's why." There was a long silence, but Evie noticed a look of disdain on his fellow student's face as he walked away. He knew the boy felt that Evie should quit taking piano lessons if he couldn't afford a piano. One afternoon, when Evie had finished his lesson, Emmanuel said to him, "Ebed, you seem sad. What's the matter?"
"Oh, nothing," Ebi replied, betraying his words with a grimace on his face.
"The others bothering you?"
"Sometimes."
"They bother me too, sometimes."
But you don't hear all the things they say."
And then Emmanuel smiled, "Ebed, I know my students. The girl who told you to play soft when you ought to be playing loud and loud when you ought to be playing soft is only criticizing you because she's doing so badly with her own lessons. The boy who criticized your rhythm hasn't been to a lesson in almost 3 months. He thinks if he points out your mistakes, people will not notice his own. The boy who told you about the wrong notes is so busy telling others about their wrong notes, he doesn't have much time to play himself. And if he played the piano very much, which he doesn't, he would probably hit more wrong notes than you do. The boy who told you to buy a piano with money you don't have has 3 pianos, but he hardly ever even plays any of them. He thinks that having pretty pianos is more important than playing them. And people always admire his pianos, and he thinks it's the same thing as admiring his piano playing. And the others who suggested that you were hurting the reputation of all the students are very insecure about their own piano playing. Your playing is different, and the other students don't like piano players who are different." And Evie, the comment about disappointing me, it isn't true. If I'm disappointed, I'll tell you. When I'm pleased, I'll tell you that too. But I am the only one who knows whether I'm disappointed or pleased. Evie felt a whole lot better after Emmanuel told him about the other students. In fact, he felt a little superior to the others. That is, until Emmanuel said to him, "Evie, now I'm telling you all this so you will remember that I have made you my student, even with your mistakes, because I love you. But I don't love you more than the others. The only reason I told you about them, and if I chose, I could tell them a lot about you, is so you will remember that there isn't a single piano student in the world who doesn't make some serious errors. Their problem is that they tried to pretend they were better than you. Now you know the truth. Remember it, and don't make their mistake. Remember how you forgot about me for so long? How you quit practicing and how I accepted you when you wanted to resume your lessons? Remember how I never stopped loving you? I will do the same for them. All my piano students are equal because they have the same teacher. You must never think you are better than the others because you know the truth. And Evie, never forget that I make up the difference for them just as I do for you. After that, Evie loved Emmanuel more than he ever had. When he walked away from the teacher's house, he felt free. He didn't have to pretend to be a wonderful piano student, nor did he have to pretend not to care. He didn't have to point out the mistakes of the other students in order to feel better about himself. After all, the piano teacher loved all the piano students, and all Eben had to do was stay close to the piano teacher. Every spring, Emmanuel had a recital at his home for his students' parents. Evie had worked for weeks on his piece, and his mother had bought him a new suit with some money she'd saved. Evie felt wonderful until he got up to play. When he started to walk toward the piano and saw all the people waiting for him to perform, he panicked. He wanted to run, but when he looked over at Emmanuel, his teacher gave him a thumbs-up sign. No way. No way am I going to disappoint Manny, Evie thought. But as Evie began to play, he forgot the music. He played the wrong notes. Once he even lost his place and had started over. When Evie got up from the piano bench, he didn't dare look at the audience or his parents or especially Emmanuel. He wanted to do so much better, but instead he had disappointed everyone. Evie was so miserable he didn't notice that the audience was applauding. In fact, they applauded for almost 5 whole minutes, shouting, "Encore! Encore!" Evie didn't hear it. He'd already walked out the back door and headed down to the lake where he sat on his rock and cursed himself. Hours passed. The night grew cold. Suddenly, Evie heard a rustle behind him, and he turned to find Emmanuel standing there. "I really botched it." "Yes, you really botched it." But they didn't know. "What do you mean they didn't know? Of course they knew. I'm so ashamed. How can I ever face them again? And Manny, I'm even more ashamed to face you. You loved me. You trusted me. You taught me to play the piano, and I let you down. Please don't look at me that way, Manny. I don't believe I can stand it."
"Evid," Manny said, taking an uninvited seat on the rock by the boy, "you misinterpret my look. I am not disappointed in you. You must remember that I've been teaching piano for a long time, longer than you could possibly know. Do you think your performance surprised me?"
"Well, I guess not, but..."
"No buts, child. Your vanity has been hurt. But you haven't failed me.
Ebed, I love you. I've told you that, but you forgot." "I guess I did,"
Evie whispered. "And you forgot something else."
"What's that?"
"Remember, I told you I would always make up for your lack.
And I did that tonight."
"You mean..." "That's right. You didn't play as well as you will play someday, and perhaps you didn't play as well as you could have played, but you played, and I made up for the difference." The audience heard the music, not the mistakes.
Evie jumped up and started to dance on the rock. Emmanuel laughed heartily, but managed to caution Evie, "Oh, you're going to fall off this rock if you don't be careful, and I don't relish going in swimming on this kind of night."
Oh, that night was one of the most important nights of Evie's life, second only to the evening when he'd met Emmanuel. Evie began to practice playing the piano far more than he had previously. In the years to come, Evie botched some other concerts. Sometimes he got angry at Emmanuel. Sometimes he thought about giving up on the whole thing, and even walked away a few more times.
But Emmanuel was always there, loving him and helping him make music. You might wonder whatever happened to that little boy. Ah, that's the best part. Ebed grew up, became a world-class pianist. He came to be known, as one critic put it, as the essence of perfection. In concert after concert all over the world, Ebed played to standing room only audiences. When he finished a concert, after the applause had died away, Ebed would smile and remember that no one had heard his mistakes. Later, he'd always thank Emmanuel for making up for the lack. One evening, after concert in New York, when he was almost 70 years old, Ebed was dining with some friends when he felt a mild pain in his chest. He marked it up to indigestion, but as the evening wore on, the pain became more and more acute. Halfway through the dinner, he collapsed, and his friends called an ambulance. Ebed was only half conscious when they put him on the stretcher and placed him in the ambulance, but then he woke up. It was a strange kind of awake because he seemed to be looking at the whole scene in the ambulance from a different perspective. One of the attendants looked at the other and they sighed. "We've lost him." "You haven't lost me," Emmanuel wanted to shout. "I'm right here." But before Ebed could speak, the sound of a piano caught his ears. The most beautiful music he had ever heard. Turning around, he found himself at Emmanuel's house. Well, maybe it wasn't Emmanuel's house, but it looked the same, only even more beautiful than he remembered. Drawn through the front door by the music, Ebed found Emmanuel playing a magnificent concerto at the grand piano. Ebed listened, entranced. When Emmanuel finished, neither he nor Ebed spoke for a moment. Then turning to Ebed, Emmanuel broke the silence. "Now it is your turn." "Me?" "Yes, you," Emmanuel laughed. "And I believe you are in for a surprise." Ebed sat down at the piano, and as he placed his hands on the keys, he felt a freedom and power he had never felt before. Every nuance, every note, every rhythm was perfect. The music soared and filled the room. Out of the corner of his eyes, Ebed could see Emmanuel smiling as a father smiles when his son performs perfectly. Ebed's heart beat excitedly. "Ebed," Emmanuel said softly, "now you play just the way I play." "Yes," Ebed replied, smiling. "I know. And I have a new name for you, Ebed. Before, you've been called Ebed, which means servant. But now, your name is Deror, freedom. Now the music is yours forever. You are home." And that is the grace of God. Father, thank you that Jesus makes all the difference. We had nothing to offer, and you had everything to give. And you did, because you loved us. Help us not to focus on the mistakes we make in playing the piano. Help us not to listen many times to the other students who can be so critical. Help us to know and never forget that you love us and we are always your students. That will never change, no matter what. In Jesus' name.